People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. Fine Music Radio, and this is People of Note. Greetings to you from Rodney Trudgeon. Now, at the Fugard Theatre, there is a show called Lang Arm. It's a David Cramer show, and it is hugely successful. It's playing to packed houses, and it's just been extended to the 3rd of March, which shows just how well it's going down in Cape Town. It's a story of love and intrigue set in the story world of Cape Town's ballroom dance culture, but back in the 1960s, and with the threat of the new apartheid laws hanging over their heads, people will do almost anything to survive. And in 1965, when Dinah Levin is widowed, she invites her nephew Jeff, whose fiancé has just dumped him, to help her manage her late husband's Canterbury Hotel. And that's the starting point of a really lovely, turns out to be, love story, among a whole lot of other things. David Cramer is with me in the studio. David, welcome, welcome, a warm welcome.
Thank you, Rodney. Nice to be here.
I don't know how you do this. I want to say churning out, but that's sort of negative. I mean, we've had so much from you. We've had Cat and the Kings, Blood Brothers, Orpheus in Africa, District 6, Kanala, among many, many others. And here we are with Lang Arm. Mm. First of all, just tell me, Lang Arm is apparently, I didn't know this, apparently a special sort of dance that's done, literally with a long arm.
Well, it's a description. The way I would describe it, it's kind of like the poor man's ballroom in a sense, you know, that in the like kind of party community where, you know, people are just dancing for pleasure. So the image of, you know, having a partner stretching out your arm and swirling around the floor is what is Lang Arm. And what you would find people doing there mostly is like foxtrot, the fustrup, the waltz, you know, and if they're skilled, maybe a little sort of cha-cha thing. But I think it's a sort of an ordinary man's ballroom dancing.
And it's a perfectly acceptable phrase, isn't it? Lang Arm dancing is
well
known in the
community.
It's
very much a Cape Town. You say Lang Arm to anyone in Cape Town and they know what you're talking about. Mm. And what's interesting about that is that you get, again, if you look at our history, you know, on the one side, Lang Arm in, say, the white community is more like a saki saki or soki jol, you know, where, where people at the braai kick off their shoes and, you know, dance around. But in Cape Town, within the black and colored community, it's a lot more competitive and is much more follows the ballroom style of dancing. And so what you have is much more Latin infused rhythms, you know, the rumba and the tanga and the cha-cha and all of those, in addition to the waltz and the foxtrot and so on. So with this musical, that's what I wanted to portray, the kind of ballroom dancing that was done informally or competitively in District 6 in the 1960s.
So it is, in fact, set in District 6, this Canterbury Hotel.
This Canterbury
Hotel. Is that a real place?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't, but there was a Canterbury Street, and there still is. Uh-huh. In fact, just two blocks away from the Fugard Theatre is the Canterbury Street. And you know, there's a parking lot there, and on the one corner of the parking lot is the Castle Hotel, which was part of the District 6. And there were, in District 6, there were hotels like the Rose and Crown, and there was the famous Tafelberg Hotel, where they held many, many dances. But I thought I would create a fictitious hotel, and so I invented the Canterbury Hotel, which was owned by Harry Levine's family.
Okay, now the important thing is how these stories come to, before we start talking more about Lang Arm. I know you've said, you're on record as saying that everyone asks you where you get these ideas from.
Yes.
But the reason I'm asking you yet again is because you have such an interesting answer.
Well, in this case, you know, I for years had thought that Lang Arm dancing on stage would make a really nice sort of story world. Romantic, it's you know, it's beautiful, and again in our show they dance beautifully, and these young people, you know, so I always for many years felt this would be a good idea for a, you know, for a musical, but what the story was I wasn't quite sure, and until I came across a photograph of a man who was part of the Cape Coloured Corps during the Second World War, and there was a picture of him sitting under a tree on a hillside in Bologna, Italy, and he's playing on a mandolin. So that was intriguing, and I started to think about, you know, who this man could be, how did he get to Italy, And all of that starts to create sort of character ideas for me. And this photograph, this man in the photograph, eventually became the Eddie Jafter character, who is the leader of the Lang Arum band in the musical.
Sorry to interrupt you, David. How did you come across the picture?
You know, I browse around the internet doing research and so on, and there was, unfortunately forget the photographer's name now, but there was a woman who was a war photographer, a South African woman, and she went over to Europe and was taking photographs of the Allied forces and the American forces, and her photographs became really well known, and eventually she ended up settling in America, but she is a well-known photographer, and these were pictures of the South African forces at the time. Now, my father and my uncle fought in the Western Desert campaign in North Africa during the war. My father was wounded, which is another idea that I used for Eddie Jafter. He was wounded. My uncle, after the war, went to Italy to work for UNRWA, helping the refugees find their way back home, and so on, which is again, so I was drawing on personal information, as you know, and kind of connecting it to this photograph.
Presumably, you don't know who the person was in the picture.
No, I have no idea.
And that's probably impossible to find out, I presume.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it would be impossible. So this is how it all came together. I think immediately, let's listen to some music from the show just to give us a taste and a feel before we talk more.
So the first track is how the musical begins. It's straight after the war when Churchill announces, you know, victory. And so we have what's called the Victory Dance.
Well, there you are. Now you know what Lang Arum sounds like. That's the opening number, the Victory Dance, from the show that's on here at the Fugard, written by David Kramer, who's my guest on People of Note this week. What struck me, David, when I watched the show, which, by the way, I enjoyed hugely, may I say, just to get into your good books.
Thank you.
Immediately, was what you said just now, the dancing is so good. Those young people have really got, some of it was quite formal, kind of ballroom dancing.
Yes.
But they had off-pat.
Yeah. Yes. Well, one of the couples dancing is a competitive dancing couple. So they really know how to do all of that stuff. But the others are actor singers and, you know, who've learned to do these dances, which was choreographed by Grant van Staer. And Grant himself was a juvenile competitor. So he knows that world of Lang Arum. But what I asked him as the director was to, you know, I wanted something more than just Langaram. I wanted something that was quite sexy and quite theatrical. So I think it goes a little beyond the conventional Langaram, as you saw.
I think so, because it really does. I know what you mean by something a bit sexy. They're young, they're good looking. The costumes are beautiful, by the way. Do you agree?
Yes, I'm complimenting you
all the way along.
Fantastic.
And it's not in any way, I wanted to say, intrusive. It adds wonderful color, lovely texture to the show, these sort of so-called ballroom dancing scenes.
Yes, that was a concern, you know, for me before I got into the rehearsal room. I was wondering how the two worlds, you know, the political story of the effects of apartheid in that time, with this romantic world of Langaram dancing, you know, would they feel sort of uncomfortable together? But by setting them in a hotel like the Canterbury, where they would have had dances over the weekend on Saturday night,
exactly.
You know, it all seems to make sense.
Yeah. And I mean, the other very important thing is that the young man who comes in, the love interest, to help Dinah. He's white, so that immediately introduces the whole tension of the apartheid period, doesn't it?
Yes. And, you know, when he starts to dance with Angelina Cupido, of course, that is, they're entering a dangerous world. And again, I suppose if you didn't really live through it, it's hard to imagine how dangerous it was.
Yes. You know, it's interesting you say that, David, because someone that I know who went to the show and who is a young man said that he's tired of being battered on the head by apartheid themes, which I think we agree was a little misdirected, because he wouldn't have known possibly the true drama of apartheid.
Yes, well, you know, I feel that there's a really big story a Cape Town story, and that is the Trifle White story, where, you know, with the Population Registration Act and the Abolition of Mixed Marriages Act, these two acts really tore families apart. People who were happily married, had children, you know, suddenly found themselves in a very precarious and untenable situation. And then again, other families where people could perhaps pass for white and decided to do that because, you know, of the benefits that, you know. And again, families were separated and never spoke to each other, you know. Those kind of the personal tragedies that occurred. So I think it's something we shouldn't forget. I think we should be reminded of this, and I think young people, you know, should be informed as to what happened 50, 60 years ago.
Especially in this way, with a show like this, where they're being entertained by really likable music and characters, and yet underneath there is this undercurrent of the tragedy that was happening around them. And there is that scene where you have the posters, District 6 declared white, and the sort of horror on their faces and what it might mean.
You know, that theme, I mean, I think I have really dealt with the theme of forced removals, and I didn't want to, you know, go there again.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult to sort of talk about District 6 without mentioning, you know, the declaration of it becoming white and subsequent destruction. And again, you know, that the whole thing about destruction of lives, destruction of property, destruction of the heart of Cape Town. You know, we're just missing that heart.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting way of putting it, missing that heart, which lasts to this day, doesn't it, really?
Yeah.
And we look across at District 6 today, and it's still mostly rubble, isn't it? I mean, they are trying to rebuild parts of it, but it'll never be the same.
Never going to be the same.
Well, let's have another piece of music while we ponder that. I see Dance With Me coming up, also from the show.
So the young Angelina is being flirtatious and teasing the Jeff, who's come from Johannesburg. He's a sort of a fish out of water, you know, coming into a hotel like this. And so it's quite easy for her to really play with him. And so she asks him to dance. And of course, he doesn't want to because he knows it's illegal.
Yes.
Dance With Me.
Hey, Mr. Brokenhearted, dance with me. The party's hardly started. Dance with me. No need for you to speak. Don't have to cheek to cheek. You think that I'm insane, so I'll ask you once again.
Read my lips, we're not dancing together.
Alas, the band to play that song once more. He'll take my hand and lead me to the floor. Just smile, it's not a crime. Hold tight and you'll be fine. No reason to resist me. I'm not asking you to kiss me.
That's another number from the show Lang Arm, written by David Kramer, who's my guest. Dance with me here on People of Note on Fine Music Radio, brought to you each week, this time by Peter Turin Productions. David, the music is what I want to talk about now, because I don't know where it all comes from. Where does all this lovely music come from? How long does it take you to come up with the ideas? Because the score was fascinating, because it had the energy, the sexiness, as you spoke about. It had sadness. It had big numbers. Mm. It had ballads. Everything is there.
Yes.
Did it take forever? You talk about sitting in front of a blank screen sometimes when the muse doesn't arrive.
Yes. Well, this one, you know, again, each project is different, and almost every song one attempts is different. Some songs come really quickly and easily, I can't explain why that is. You know, I wrote one of my biggest hits in the shower. You know?
Which one was that, David?
Stoxy La Lien, you know.
Right.
I just came out of the shower and something had happened, you know. I was, working with these words, rhyming the words, and the song just tumbled out. But with musicals, it's more challenging, because you're often writing for the character, you know. And I can see why collaborations with, you know, a lyricist, say, with a musician, are sometimes better and easier to do, because you have, you know, two heads working on the same.
Yeah,
and then that
yeah.
certainly was the case when I worked with Tully Peterson. But now, so the challenge is that, and I think often I'm imagining myself to be the character, and I start to think what the character would say, and I perhaps start with the lyric, and then I'll pick up the guitar, and I'll try and find a mood, a chord, you know, and a phrase within that chord, and, you know, until I stumble up, I make a mistake that I like.
Yes, a mistake that you like.
There's a mistake that I like, and I wouldn't have thought of that, which is, you know, is often why I work on a piano keyboard as well, mm-hmm. because I don't play the piano, so I make lots of mistakes, and that's very good.
Hearing interesting chords,
you get an interesting
chords.
Melodic interval or whatever.
Right.
But with Lang Arm, some of the songs, again, they happened quite easily. A song like we just heard, the Dance With Me song, you know, was a kind of a pastiche on that old 60s pop stuff, you know. Mm. And I suppose it's an era that I know quite well, and I just found myself writing that song within one morning. It was done. You know.
Are you saying it was easy?
yeah. Some things can take weeks. You know, yes. You keep going back, and they're not what you want. And yeah. So.
And then the other thing that struck me, apart from listening to the music, was do you then orchestrate it? Because there was a band there of what, five or six?
No, that's arranged. Johan Lingenfelder. Who is the resident arranger.
He does that.
And he's the musical director on this musical. So he took my melodies, I play them to him, I sing them and play them on the guitar, and then he then does a whole arrangement for the band, and very beautifully.
Mm.
And I think we've had so many compliments on the band.
They're great.
Because, you know, the brass just comes in where it should be, and it's not just a band, like a Langarum band would just be playing all the time.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, almost
would, everybody would want to play all the time.
Yeah,
but in this case, you know, everyone's told where to play and when to play.
Mm-hmm. You say you've done a lot together with Johan. When he does stuff, and you said it was very beautiful, does he ever do something you disagree with? And you say, no, wait, Johan, no, I don't like that. Perhaps less brass, less wood.
There was a little of that. There was a little of that. And he welcomes the notes, the feedback. I think that, you know, when you are collaborating on a new project, that's expected.
Yes,
you know,
of
someone
course.
Hears it in a certain way, I hear it in a different way. And I think in this project, mostly what he did, I was, you know, very, very happy with. And one or two places, I just said, I don't know if I would do that. And you know, sometimes I just let him, you know, do it the way he wants to do it. I trust him with that. He worked with me on Orpheus in Africa, and he did those big vocal arrangements for the choir.
Mm.
So I really respect his talent and the way he hears things. I don't have any of that.
No, don't say that. But when you mentioned Orpheus in Africa, I've always thought of that as your opera, because that was really quite operatic as opposed to musical.
Yes, the style is very operatic, right, with Lynelle Kennard singing.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. And it must be an interesting process choosing people for your musicals, because you always have such fresh, young, lot of them are experienced, as one can see from the program.
Mm.
And it's a big cast, isn't it?
Yes, it is quite a big cast. How many are there?
Probably about 20.
Yeah, with a band and everything. It's probably about 20 people with a band, maybe 14 performing and then 6 in the band. Yeah.
So it is quite a big cast.
Yes. You can't really do musicals with anything smaller than that. I mean, the only time I did was with Cut and the Kings. But yeah, I love the idea of finding new young talent. I like the idea of, you know, bringing them into a company where there is experience as well. So in this case, we have, you know, someone like Elton Landrieu, who is, you know, very experienced actor, a film actor and stage actor. And I remember, you know, first hearing him at the Waterfront School, and I dragged him out of there and took him off to Europe to play in Cut and the Kings. And, you know, that was a long time ago. Yeah, and then my daughter telling me about Lynelle Kennard and listening to her and bringing her in. And now we have Kim Louie, who was on Broadway with me 20 years ago and has come back into the theater. So there's that experience mixed with these fresh young faces and voices that have come straight out of college or drama school.
Mm-hmm. The audition process must be actually fascinating, because for your shows, it's very much that sort of triple threat thing, isn't it? You have
to
dance, and act.
Yeah, this musical needed the triple threat.
Yeah, the triple threat.
You know, meaning that they have to be able to act and sing and dance, particularly the dancing. We started with the dancing this time, you know, finding people that could dance and then seeing if they could sing and act. And it's a balance between good actors and really good dancers.
Right. Well, we're going to have another piece of music. I'm glad we're listening to music from the show this time. And Lang Arum, we could call this the title track. Is that right?
Yes, I think this is just a piece, a saxophone piece. And the saxophone in the Lang Arum bands in Cape Town is the distinctive sound.
Thank you.
Well, that's called Lang Arm, from the show Lang Arm, and it's on here at the Fugard Theatre. It's a show that's been written by David Cromer, who's my guest on People of Note here on Fine Music Radio. And David, how long does this sort of thing take? How long did it take you to put Lang Arm together?
About a year.
Oh, okay, that's not too
Yeah,
bad.
This one was quite far. It's, I would say, often 18 months to 2 years on a musical, depending on, you know, again, depending on the songs and how big it is and so on and how much research I have to do. But with Lang Arm, I spent just short of a year working on it, and I was quite pleased with how smoothly it went.
Mm-hmm. And you are the director, aren't you?
I am the director.
So you actually are there telling people what to do. There was a lovely scene which caused people around me to laugh. There's a character, and you can tell me what his name was, who liked to lie his head on the breasts of the ladies.
Yes, he's a comedic dancer. His real name is Byron Clarkson, and in the show they just refer to him as Bernie. He doesn't really have a speaking part, but he's a comedic dancer. We chose him and another young woman, Paxton, you know, because they just their physicality, and they're such good dancers that we could get some kind of humor out of that.
And there is lots to laugh at, isn't there, apart from the underlying tragedy of what's happening outside.
Yes, there is that, and I think people are quite surprised. They come out with a really good feeling, the way the story ends and the way that the whole musical plays out at the end. People kind of feel a sense of joy, despite having, you know, heard what happened in that time.
Well, exactly. And that's I think, is a bit of a compliment to you, because I think it achieved what you wanted
yes,
to.
Yes, I try and do
you
that.
You get the message across, but you come out wreathed in smiles.
Good.
Which is what happened. What happens now when it finishes its run on the 3rd of March? Does it go anywhere else? Or?
No, there are no plans. You know, unfortunately, I think we have now entered a period where touring these big shows is a big financial risk. Mm. So, you know, because the question is, are you bringing it up to Johannesburg? And we would love to, but we're finding that the support for theatre in a place like Johannesburg just isn't the same as in Cape Town. There seems to be a reluctance to go out at night. And so to get a show off the ground there and to have a company, you know, staying in Johannesburg and the extra costs of all of that, it makes you think twice.
Absolutely. Yeah. And would a show like this, which is very much a sort of Cape Town feel, go down well, do you think, in Johannesburg?
Oh,
would it go down?
Absolutely, yeah. Now, you know, this is another question I get asked, and I've been asked for my whole career. You know, like they asked me about the first musical, you know, do you think the people will get it up in Johannesburg? They love it. You know, the whole Cape, it's a flavor that people love. But the story is universal. Mm, there's no
absolutely.
Difficulty in identifying with the characters of Dinah Levine or Eddie Jafta or, you know, Jeff and Angelina. So there's, you know, it doesn't matter where you come from. I mean, we have so many foreign visitors, and there's nothing that excludes them. And I think they just, you know, they love the story world, this Cape-flavored story world.
Absolutely.
So, yes, there are, you know, as you said, there's a word here and there to give it that quality.
That even I didn't understand, and people around me killed themselves laughing.
But, it doesn't matter, because it's got nothing to do with the story.
Yeah, and if it's on an international basis, would it also
Yes, it will work.
This would work. It just shows, because Cape Town has this unique history, doesn't it, with the coloured community down here, which is unique to Cape Town, really, and has a sound, a flavour, as you called it, a colour, everything that's unique.
Yeah, well, I mean, we have a culture which has evolved over the past 350 years by, you know, this mixing of, you know, various forces that has made up the Cape.
Mm-hmm.
So in all aspects, you know, architectural, you know, our architecture, our food, our way of speaking, our language, Afrikaans, you know, all comes out of the Cape. And,
yes.
and those, you know, the mixing of big cultural groups forging something new. And I find that fascinating.
I remember when I interviewed you once before, David, I asked you what was the fascination for you with the coloured culture here in Cape Town, because you're also quite well known for researching or discovering instruments and sounds, aren't you, that are connected to the coloured community?
Yes, well, I have a very interest in roots folk music.
That's right, that's where it comes from, isn't it?
Yes, roots folk music. So my interest in Afrikaans folk music leads us back to the days of slavery and, you know, the first Afrikaans, you know, came out of the mouths of slaves, and the first Afrikaans music, you know, was made and performed by slaves. So I find that absolutely fascinating, and I want to again bring those stories to the fore.
How did you discover that to be fascinating? You were a very young man when that happened.
I was at university. I was in England at university, and I started reading about the Lomax family, who had, you know, done the original recordings of the blues, and you know, and their research into roots, Americana. And I started to think, well, I wonder what that is in for me, you know, in South Africa. Do we have a kind of a roots music?
Yes.
And then I came back and started to scratch around in that area and discovered that Afrikaans wasn't a white man's language, you know. It was quite a liberating moment for me.
Yes. You are Afrikaans, aren't you, first and foremost?
I'm both. Yes. I grew up speaking English at home, but my father is Afrikaans, from an Afrikaans family.
And it's something of which you're immensely proud, aren't you, this heritage, this Afrikaans heritage, the richness of the language, the beauty of the folk music, the catchiness of the folk music.
I think at one point I didn't speak Afrikaans for political reasons, but then I was misinformed. And once I started to understand the real history of Afrikaans, then yes, I became very much a kind of a cultural warrior in that,
yes, very
in
much
that
so.
Case. Yeah.
I was always amused at your ad for this play, where, especially over Christmas, you said, and you can bring your friends from England and elsewhere in the world because it's in English.
Yes.
And so, I mean, you must have made a conscious decision to write it in English.
Yes, why we're saying that, I think, is because the title Lang Arm suggests Afrikaans. And because I'm so well known for Afrikaans work as well, I didn't want people to assume that this is just going to be another, you know, sort of David Kramer Afrikaans Sokkie Sokkie musical. So, and I know that we attract a lot of overseas visitors, and I just wanted them to be reassured that they weren't going to sit there, you know, having everything thrown at them in Afrikaans.
In Afrikaans. No, it's very clear, and the sound is very good. Anyway, the next piece is called Bokkie. Is that right? Is that Bokkie. What we're going to hear?
Yes. Bokkie is a great Lang Arm a piece of music, and this is something I wrote many years ago, I think in the 1980s.
Oh, so you've used some...
Because I did that stuff, you know, it is Fustrup, so it fitted beautifully with this musical.
Another song from the show Lang Arm, that was called Bokkie. The music and the words, as you know, written by David Kramer, who is with me in the studio. And just in the few moments we have left, David, what's now? I mean, you're so busy still. You're churning out these musicals. And I don't mean it negatively. Churning can be negative. Hmm. But what's going to happen now when you put Lang Arm to bed finally?
Well, I'm going straight into another production at the Fugard, which is an adaptation that I've done from a Scottish playwright called David Gregg. He wrote a play about 10 years ago called Midsummer, which was on at the Edinburgh Festival. And my friend Nicholas Kent from London, he was the director, the artistic director of the Tricycle Theatre in London. About a year ago, he was telling me about this play and how wonderful it was and how he thought it would really fit nicely into a Cape Town setting. And would I be interested in, you know, doing an adaptation for this work? So I read it and I liked it very much, and I could see why, you know, he was, it's in a way is a sort of an ode to Edinburgh, and I've made it something like that to Cape Town. And it's a romantic comedy. So Nicholas is coming out soon to direct this play, and it's a play with songs.
I was just going to say, is it a pure play or a musical?
No, it's a play with songs, but it's not a musical.
Okay.
So because the songs are not character songs, they don't advance the story or do anything like that. But the two actors sing and play the songs almost as interludes, but like your program here, Rodney.
Yes, as interludes.
They talk and then they play a piece of music. So it's this lovely, so I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to working with a different director, and we have Bianca Flanders and Dean Barley playing the roles. Who are great singers, and Dean is a fantastic guitar player. So it's going to be fun, and the pressure won't be on me this time.
This time, yes. Do you still get nerves, David, when your show opens like Lang Arm to see how it'll be received, what the critics will say?
Yes, of course you do. One is that, you know, I wouldn't say nerves. I get you know, I hope for the best. I think by the time I get to opening night. We've been through previews and so on. I'm usually relaxed enough to sit amongst the audience, because I'm not hiding away, you know, no. Biting my fingernails in the foyer somewhere.
As apparently Gilbert used to do of Gilbert and Sullivan.
Well, I think a lot of people do that. You know, they really don't know what's going to happen. But I suppose being a performer
yourself,
you know, you get to a point where the butterflies don't bother you anymore. Mm-hmm.
And when are we going to see you perform again, David?
Well, I do occasionally. And, you know, maybe I might do a sort of a retrospective story thing about, you know, I don't know. Who knows? I'm not too keen to go out there every night. That's the thing. I much prefer the others, the younger people, to go out there, and I'll lean back and watch them.
You nearly said at my age.
At my age.
Well, you're one of those perennially young-looking people with your lovely hat on. And then the other thing, just to end, is to say something wonderful about that Fugard Theatre. Isn't it just the most lovely venue? The Fugard Theatre, in every respect.
Such a pleasure to work there. There's a passion for storytelling, a passion, high standards. Mm-hmm. The actors feel very welcome and very comfortable, as do the audience when they come in. Yeah, it's a great theatre. I think a huge asset that Eric Abraham has brought to Cape Town. You know, it's Eric's gift to Cape Town.
I did know that.
It's certainly not a money-making exercise.
Oh, right. Okay. And that beautiful old church as well, that's the facade, which is just perfect. Well, David, we've kind of run out of time, but I think we can fit in one more song from the show. And I'm very grateful that you brought... Are you going to release a CD? Can we buy this eventually?
Well, I'm looking into it. Let's say that. Okay. I can't promise that.
Okay. But the last one is called The Cauldron of Love's Heart.
Heat.
Oh, heat. So in much my handwriting.
Cauldron of Love's Heat.
Oh, okay.
People are fused together.
And where does, remind me where this takes place in the show?
She's starting to teach him to dance. He's feeling very nervous. And she reaches out and she tells him that he can't dance if he's frightened. And she reaches out and she says, take my hand.
Okay, well, David Kramer, thank you very much. Thanks for all you've given us over the years and for this lovely show, Lang Arm. And I dare say we'll speak to you again quite soon.
Thank you.
Listen, I know you're scared of the law, but you can't dance when you're frightened. Jeff, take my hand.
Palm to palm, skin to skin, raise your arm and let's begin.
Catch my eye, but don't speak. Thigh to thigh, cheek to cheek.
When you're dancing in the cauldron of love's heat.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
Peter Turin and Kickstart invite you to take a musical journey into a world where nothing is as it seems. From the 30th of January to the 2nd of March, revel in Stephen Sondheim's sublime musical, Into the Woods, starring Kate Normington, Earl Gregory, Ashley Harvey, and a star-studded cast at Theatre on the Bay. Go into the woods where witches can be right, giants can be good. You decide what's right, you decide what's good. Into the Woods, only at Theatre on the Bay from January the 30th.
Fine Music Radio, and we have some time in hand, fortunately, before our next program. So I thought let's continue enjoying some more songs from David Kramer's musical Lang Arm that he brought with him to the studio. For example, this one, which comes from the show called Look in Your Eyes.
As I look in her eyes tonight, my heart keeps trying put up a fight. If this is wrong, why does it feel so right? I'd be willing to break the law as I look in her eyes tonight.
Thank you. joking. Juvenile champ and all.
Yeah, but that was a long time ago.
But would you ever compete again?
I'm still a little rusty.
Yeah, but it wouldn't take you long to get back on form.
Yeah, and then?
Then you can stand in for Lulu.
Look, we can't dance together. It's illegal.
But not in Swaziland.
We'd be taking a huge risk.
Who is gonna see us?
Someone's always watching.
So we'll be careful and quiet.
This could be dangerous if the sparks ignite like a burning fuse on a stick of dynamite. How can this be wrong when it feels so right? But I'm willing to break the law as I
a song there from Lung Arum, the show by David Kramer, and that was called Look in Your Eyes. We are listening to some music from the show as we approach our next program. And another song that we did manage to fit into People of Note today was from the show called Love Against the Law. And this is what it sounds like.
I never thought I would feel like this, or that he would be the one. It was just a dance until we kissed. Now what's done can't be undone. My love is like a flower that suddenly has bloomed, but some people
was called Love Against the Law, one of the songs from that marvelous musical by David Kramer called Lung Arum, which is playing at the Fugard Theatre. And the season, as I've been saying, has been extended to the 3rd of March.